My friends, the great experiment.
Down on the Lord, thanks. Thanks.
Hit it.
Trick, trick.
Would you look at that?
The greatest trick, trick.
And you people, you're all astronauts on some kind of star.
Trick, trick.
The greatest trick.
Welcome to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
We're here on this special occasion to talk about the season finale of Star Trek Lower Decks Season 3.
Yeah, and if you're hearing this on the day of the drop, it's Thursday.
Yeah. Thanks for not dropping Greatest Trek and letting Greatest Trek drop instead.
Why are we even doing it like this? We're doing it because there's overlap between Greatest Trek and Prodigy.
Because there's a new episode of Prodigy out today, too. Yeah. But we'll review that on our normal Tuesday episode next week.
We will.
Yeah.
So
there was a debate. Do we review both episodes in one big super episode, or do we split them up?
Hell no. Every episode deserves its own episode.
I agree with that. I think that we've done two animated series episodes in one podcast episode in the past, which those are a little lighter on content, you know?
Yeah, but I feel like instead of more episode, there should just be more us. Like what we're going through. The stories of our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. People really want to know that stuff. They definitely aren't annoyed by it at all.
I'm at this point, I'm just only a C story in my life. Like there's no A or B story going on. It's just background C.
Yeah. I'm starting to feel that way a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. The real story, my wife and son, I'm just also here.
You're important to me, Ben.
Aw, thanks, buddy.
And dozens of other people.
Yeah. It's a cadre of dozens.
Yeah, really is. Miriam Dozens.
Cadre's a good word.
Yeah.
What does that come from?
Cadre.
Cadre. It sounds like padre.
Wildcat was written in a kind of obsolete vernacular.
Vamanos, cadre, he said.
Yeah. Yeah.
As he grabbed the worn and flinted horse strap and they rode together in the friskulating dusk light.
You got a mind like a steel trap, my friend. You remember that scene flawlessly.
I just want to hear that dialogue in my voice played over the top of each other to hear how awful it is.
The crickets and the rust beetles scuttled among the nettles of the sage thicket.
Vamanos, cadre, he said, as he grabbed the worn and flinted horse strap and they rode together in the friskulating dusk light.
That's like the spoken word equivalent of the brown note. Like the dissonance is so bad that just people slam the podcast. I thought that this was going to be good that there was an extra episode this week.
It's like playing two sound files mirrored. Like it just goes away completely. It's just dead air for 10 seconds.
I think Wendy is a talented enough producer that she'll figure out some way to make it sound like something.
God, she always does.
Boy, Adam, I don't have a lot to talk about today. I just kind of want to jump right in. How do you feel about that?
Let's not just wade in like a slowpoke until the water gets up to our trunks and then our nerts and then the waistband and then the chest and then the face and the hair. Let's jump in.
Yeah. In our trunks that we definitely made after. What is that? Is that episode called Nemesis?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah. It was a good episode.
It's sharper to blend with the trunks.
There's got to be swim trunk options available with our store partners, right? Could we just actually make trunks?
Yeah. Let's put trunks in podshop.biz.
Podshop.biz?
And see if anybody buys trunks.
Here's the thing about trunks. Not even a passing reference to Star Trek or our show.
No.
The pattern is trunks.
It says trunks on the butt. in like yellow serif font.
Can I ask you a question? And I'm almost embarrassed to double check this with you. But is the trunk you're thinking of as the pattern for trunks? Are we talking about a vehicle trunk, or are we talking about like a dresser wardrobe, like trunk, like steamer trunk?
Oh, wow. I was just picturing tree trunks, but.
Oh my God, there's a third trunk?
Maybe we should do.
What the fuck? That's like the most obvious trunk there is, and I didn't think of it first.
That's like the trunk they're talking about in the show.
God, I'm an idiot.
I think what we should do is kind of a pen and pixel style, like rap album cover, just bad Photoshop of all the different types of trunks in a pattern.
Like a No Limit Records.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing about the wooden trunks that you're referring to is that it's too dickish. Like if you're wearing trunks and it's like wood.
Yeah.
I think that's too much like a Big Johnson's situation.
I think there's a tasteful way to do it. I think we could figure out a way.
Maybe the trunks are on their sides and there's like a giant like fern surrounding the tipped over trunk.
Right. Yeah. Or maybe like the trunk has been hewn so short and then the fern kind of obscures it.
Yeah.
It's more of a micro trunk situation.
Or maybe the trunk is like an average size, but there's like a curious bend to it.
Yeah.
That suddenly you see a lot of commercials about fixing. Like you never really knew how much of a problem it was generally until you just see commercial after commercial for fixing a bend in your trunk.
Yeah. And then you like take a screenshot of that and put it on Twitter and go like, why am I getting served all these ads about fixing the bend in my trunk? And everybody makes fun of you because they're like, that's because of. You're obviously searching for what to do in your trunk. All right. I'm just picturing like a picture of tree trunks where you don't see the tops or the bottoms. So it's just the verticality of the tree trunks. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's an all over print.
I'm closing my eyes. The friends of DeSoto watching at home can see this.
And then on the butt, it says trunks. Or should it say trunks? I think trunks is better.
I don't think I want to tell people what the joke is. Here's an alt. Can I just note you for a second?
Okay.
I love the idea.
Could it just say juicy on the butt?
Of the trunks, like running through the, like if we're calling these swim trunks the frame of the image,
right.
The trunks running through them.
Right.
Love that. But what if a car has crashed into one of the trunks? And because of the force of the impact, its trunk has opened up.
Wow.
And inside that trunk, can you guess what's inside?
The steamer trunk.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty solid business. Yeah. It's going to be more expensive because I was just thinking about like pulling something off of Getty Images. But in this scenario, we're going to have to get a car and a steamer trunk and go crash it in a forest and take a picture of it.
We have a lot of talented artists who I think could make this image possible.
It's true.
Yeah. Maybe the car was swerving to avoid an elephant. What do you think of that?
Wow. Yeah.
But the elephant is off screen. So all you see is the elephant's trunk.
Right. Right.
That the car was going to avoid.
I mean, I would swerve to avoid hitting an elephant. I mean, you hear people fuck their cars up hitting deer. Imagine what would happen if you hit an elephant.
God. And then so much
blood.
The
bitter irony of hitting a tree.
And the thing about the elephants is they grieve their fallen comrades.
Yeah.
They get so very sad.
Anyways, do you want to talk about this episode of Lower Decks?
Ben, it's the season finale. I can't believe it. I've begun to grieve the end of season 3.
It's season 3, episode 10. The stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas.
Our cold open is a very sad ransom.
Yeah.
Recording. Kind of the follow-up to the Breen attack. The Cerritos is in a starbase being repaired.
Douglas Station, the starbase, really.
Yeah. I shouldn't have diminished it by just calling it a starbase.
It really looks like shit compared to the way it looked at the start of last week's episode. And
you know what sucks about the setting, though, also, is that the Cerritos is looking its worst, but inside the starbase are all of these Texas class ships, and they're just staring at them.
Yeah.
Like there's an audience for this, and the Texas class are all like new and gleaming and stuff.
Very humiliating.
It's like needing to, like, you're doing a book report in front of class and your face is just covered in acne.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a bad face day. Mm-hmm. That's what the Cerritos has.
Yeah. And the Texas class just seemed to be like effortlessly hot, you know?
How do they do it?
It's like you never see them working out.
No.
They have like expensive clothes and good hair.
I know.
Clear complexions. What the fuck?
Yeah. They transfer schools and they're doing fine. Like picking up friends left and right.
Yeah. What is their secret?
I don't know. Freeman is back at Starfleet Command, kind of answering for what happened. And she's in a very Star Trek VI looking conference room.
Yeah. This is the conference room where the Admiralty chews you out.
Yeah.
Disappointment is an understatement, Captain Freeman.
And springs surprises on you.
I must protest.
These lights are very specific desk lamps, and I really want one of these.
Yeah. There's that like Star Trek design Instagram account that tells you like what 70s Italian furniture company made whatever chair you see in.
These are so specific, these desk lamps, and everyone gets one at these meetings.
I know. I need a desk lamp. I don't have a lamp.
Yeah.
I got a desk. I got no lamp.
Who designed this conference room?
This fucking conference room. Man.
No overhead lights.
It's so sinister looking.
You get a desk lamp. You get a desk lamp. Do you think like a bar where there's regulars and plaques on the bar, do you think there's like Admiral Cartwright's old...
old desk lamp?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the... they engrave the desk lamp itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, they might have like Admiral Cartwright's name off of his desk lamp after.
You go to turn it on and it double crosses you later. Like like you walk, you go back home and the desk lamp is fucking your partner. Desk lamp, what the fuck?
Oh, you're home early.
Oh, and you're totally getting her off?
She never let me do it there. Yeah, so the bad news that Carol Freeman is getting is that the Cali class, broadly speaking, are being decommissioned and replaced with the Texas class. These are automated ships that can do the work of the pathetic California class ships and use way less resources to do it.
This would undo centuries of progress.
Captain, I'm sorry, but the Council has decided to take Admiral Buenamigo's advice and shutter the California class.
Two things are happening here, right? There's the scandal of what happened against the Breen and needing to be saved by this new class of ship. But Freeman's defenses are also removed in an argument because of what happened in the press.
Right.
Like, she's the captain of a ship that has been humiliated in a couple of different ways. And so anything she does to stick up for herself is weak. It doesn't work.
Yeah, there was something I really liked about the way this unfolds, which is that, like, the Admiralty has been given like sort of a false choice by Buenamigo, like continue with these bad ships or do my new good ships. One California class does not represent the entire class of ships.
It seems like we need all the ships still.
Yeah.
For stuff.
Right. But like they're like too dumb to see that for what it is or something.
It may be the distinction between the California class as a ship and the California class as a program.
Right.
Because those terms are used kind of interchangeably in this argument. And I think I could see a world where like the ships exist, but they aren't doing the program of Second Contact the way the California class was created to do.
Right. So news of all of this has reached the Cerritos via Hans the Towel Guy.
The Gossip King? He's never been wrong.
The betas are talking about this and what a drag it is. And pretty soon the betas are kind of like dealing with the advent of bad news by engaging with it comedically. Something that you and I are very familiar with.
Yeah.
And Boimler is doing his impressions of all of the upper deckers.
Jack Quaid doing a great job, I should add.
Yeah. Good stuff. And his impression of Shax goes on a little long enough for Shax to walk in behind him.
Is that what I sound like to you?
Lieutenant Shax, no.
Oh, man. As a person who has had this happen to him in real life, where I was dragging a college roommate who I thought had left the dorm, was standing right behind me. Oh, gives me the willies every time I see this. It's like such a trope in film and television.
Yeah. Yeah.
In real life, it's not fun.
I mean, the way that Shax takes this, he's clearly one of those big dudes with big hearts.
Mm.
But I guess I'm just a big joke to you.
Wait, I'm sorry.
He projects that tough Bajoran-ness that we've seen so many times.
Yeah.
Like the Bajorans, the badasses.
Right.
That we've seen over and over again. Bloodthirsty. Aggressive.
He's a real Shakar type.
Yeah.
This whole thing is probably just inside my head.
He gets upset at Boimler, but when he turns around, you see how affected he is.
Yeah. He really got his fifis hurt. Yeah. And he kind of storms off with a tear running down his cheek. And you hate to see it.
Boimler chases after him. He can't have... I mean, this is relatable, right? Neither of us can tolerate anyone being mad at us.
No.
And Boimler makes it his mission not to have a bridge person mad at him specifically. This is a career-limiting move if he allows it to happen.
That's going to be a thing that Boimler is worried about all episode. We also check in on Mariner. I loved the Indiana Jones music cue. There's the speculation. I'm sure Mariner's having a bad time also. And we cut to Mariner like swinging on ropes and stealing a golden idol from a tomb. Getting chased by Ferengis.
Yeah, I've got a question. In Lower Decks Season 3, Episode 10, The Stars at Night. The stars at night are big and bright. Deep in the heart of Texas.
I went a little, you know, you ever do a karaoke and you pitch it up an octave too high?
Go for an octave that you don't actually have.
Yeah, kind of went too high on that. Anyway... Are you drawing an intentional equivalence between the Nazis and the Ferengi?
Hmm.
I'll take my answer across this cavernous room. Like I thought I sounded pretty good when I was singing the Texas song. The octave mistake notwithstanding, but like the acoustics in here sounded pretty good.
Get a light.
Yeah. Hmm. Wasn't it like that French guy that was chasing him in the...
Balud,
yeah.
Yeah.
But he was in league with the Nazis.
He was.
Somebody called me out for mispronouncing Nazis the other day on a podcast.
The idea that anyone would call us out for mispronouncing anything, I think says a lot about them.
Yeah.
Our pronunciation waters are so muddy.
Yeah. Have you heard the show?
Who knows how you say anything anymore based on listening to this show?
She gets back to Petra up there on the ship after, you know, being beamed out right at the last possible moment. And they've got their golden idol. They're going to go deliver it to a museum. This is not...
It belongs in a museum?
It literally belongs in a museum.
Yeah.
And they're not going to let Ferengis steal it and sell it. But she is curious about the financing of this whole operation that Petra has going on. She's like,
oh yeah, who's footing the bill for all this? It has to cost like a fortune.
Mariner refers to the back of the ship behind the door, an area of the ship we never see. But from the exterior, you know is there.
Yeah. It's a bit like the runabouts in DS9. Like, you see the back of the runabout in a TNG episode. You never see it in a Deep Space Nine episode.
We're finally going to see the back of Petra Aberdeen's ship, and it's going to be a long conference table and a bowl of fruit in the middle.
Mm.
Because that's how all these ships are designed.
Maybe outside of Starfleet, they do it a little different.
If you have a ship with a conference table in the back... You shouldn't need to go to conferences.
Yeah, you could just have them right there.
I know.
But needless to say, Petra Aberdeen's ship can really throw it back.
Yeah.
And they're off to their next adventure, or off to like deliver this via some more adventures, right? Like there's some,
yeah.
They can get some mummies along the way.
Mariner is totally jacked here from like that new job euphoria.
Yeah.
But also finally working for an authority figure where like the best managers dictate what and not how. And this is something that Mariner articulates here. She's like, I love working for you because I get to be me. Like, I get the job done, but I do it my way.
Yeah.
You know, the best part of this gig is that you never get pissed off. Thanks for letting me do my thing.
That has not been her experience traditionally in Starfleet. Yeah. And it's a great contrast. Speaking of conferences, Adam, the conference at Starfleet Command is still going on.
Not a lot of food in this conference room for how long it's running.
Yeah, you want there to be like a table set up in the corner with the urn of tea and the, you know, light snackables.
I think it explains how chippy things are going here in the meeting also.
This is his vanity project, not mine.
Yeah, Freeman finally kind of sticks up for herself more vociferously. She's like, listen, you're talking about commissioning these fucking Texas class ships. Like, we've seen one in action once, and it was like suspiciously well suited to that in a way. Why don't we actually test them in a real world mission race? Like, see if they can do better than a Cali class.
Yeah, like, it's good at battle. That's not what Cali class does. Yeah. Why don't we see how good it is at second contact?
If your drones really are better than my crew, then it should be easy.
And the admirals see the wisdom in this to their credit.
Yeah.
These aren't just bad Starfleet admirals. They're like morally complicated Starfleet admirals.
Not all admirals.
Yeah. So this is going to be a race. It's going to be a competition. And, you know, it's for the whole Cali class. You know, it's not just for the pride of the Cerritos. It's for the whole core.
If you thought Freeman was intense with the department heads before the reporter arrived, try to imagine the intensity placed on the department heads just before this second contact race. All the departments have to snap into action here.
We're doing what?
A second contact race.
What even is that?
I made it up on the spot.
She's really like Gene Hackmaning them, like doing drills when there's a fire in the galley kind of energy.
Yeah.
We cut around. We see like what the prep looks like in the various departments. Billups is getting everybody ready in the engine room. We get a moment with Rutherford being like mildly distracted by something on his iPad while this is going on. We kind of blow past it so that we can get Ransom schooling everybody on how to sit in the chair like a commander.
Yeah.
Command that chair.
That's important stuff.
Yeah.
That's something that a drone ship wouldn't know how to do.
No. And before we know it, we're like on the starting line and the Cerritos and the Alito are like right next to each other and they get the go ahead to start the competition and the fucking Cerritos warps off and Buen Amigo slows his roll. He does not start his drone ship up.
Let's make this interesting. Give them a head start.
He lights a cigar.
Yeah.
Smug as fuck.
That is one smug cigar.
Yeah.
There aren't enough contest episodes in Star Trek, are there?
I like a contest episode.
There's something about how the ships are placed in space that reminded me of that Enterprise D versus Hathaway.
Yeah, the war games simulation episode.
Yeah, the countdown to that beginning, that was so much fun in its brand of intensity. And there's a little bit of that baked into this moment. Like, all right, we're about to do this thing.
Yeah.
Stakes are high. And also like one side being so confident in their superiority over the other.
So it seems like second contact mainly involves like dropping off like power generators and observation posts and stuff.
Yeah.
So like the first place they stop, they're, you know, assembling a power generator and they discover that the Alito can just beam a fully functioning generator down without even breaking orbit. And that's pretty frustrating. It means they're already kind of behind the eight ball.
It's frustrating, but it's also terrifying because the Alito seems to beam it down a couple of inches above the ground and then gravity drops it. Yeah. After that, like no one brings up how dangerous that is.
Yeah. Also, Rutherford, get your head in the game, man.
Also, the ship really blindsides a lot of people with a legal decision that I guess everyone in Starfleet should have seen coming.
Yeah.
But as soon as it gets some sort of majority in terms of how many of its type of ship are in the fleet, like makes this crazy pronouncement, like something leaks.
Mm.
And then you think there's no way this is actually going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Weird. You would think that after the outcry from the leak.
Yeah.
But no, they don't care.
Do you think they intentionally named the ship that phonetically?
I don't know.
Because it's all I can think about whenever the name of the ship is said.
I know. Like the other two are the Dallas and the Corpus Christi, which are names of places in Texas I actually recognize.
Yeah.
I didn't know that there was an Aledo, Texas.
Yeah.
Maybe there shouldn't be anymore. Bring down the monuments. The second planet they go to, LT-358, is a supposedly lifeless planet that they're going to start terraforming, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rock. No indigenous life.
And they're down on the planet building an outpost that looks very much like the one in the We Discovered a Blinking Light Down a Hole episode.
Tendi finds some microbes down there and she starts communicating with them and the microbes are pissed.
Yeah.
And Tendi's like, when Kirk dropped you on LT-357, you had a fighting chance. You had a way of life. You could have made it.
And in her microscope, the molecules form, this is LT-358.
This really slows things down, right? Because this is like the main thing about Starfleet. You don't want to accidentally kill something while you're trying to improve the planet.
So the Cerritos crew stop and double check the numbers while the Aledo like drops its observation post and power generator and moves on without any fucks given.
It's like the Aledo doesn't even stop to consider like the very specific arguments against its position and like just does the broad general dumb idea of things.
Yeah.
Without thinking of the consequences.
And when people like criticize like the fundamental flaws in logic in the kind of choice that it has made, it seems like unwilling to even reconsider its position.
Right. It kind of doubles down.
Yeah. In an ugly way. That's kind of psychotic, actually.
An ugly way where lives are at stake.
Right. So the next planet is a, quote, Brigadoon-type planet.
Very funny.
Achaemenid 9. The Cerritos doesn't even make it to this one in time, but I did love the little vignette of the two people waiting for the... Like, I guess they're sort of like a cargo cult.
Yeah.
Like, the people of Achaemenid 9 just, like, waiting for Starfleet to drop some shit off for them.
This blows! It's taking forever!
Just don't embarrass me, okay? You're the one who begged to come with me, all right?
Do you think that dude that Jadzia Dax fell in love with, do you think he still got the candle lit for her?
Yeah. I mean, Star Trek is full of sex candles, Adam. I mean, I'm sure he does.
Yeah. This interplay between the two Achaemenids is hilarious.
I really like them.
They have their own thing happening. They have their own episode happening within this episode.
Yeah. They always say, like, when you're writing a screenplay, like, every character should think that they're the main character of the story. Mm-hmm. And these people definitely think that they're the main characters of the story. But the Cerritos is, like, pulling up when Achaemenid 9 phases back out of the plane of existence that we are in.
We're too late.
You know, at this point, how Wayne of an amigo could you possibly be if you're laughing this maniacally?
Sin bueno is how much.
That is exactly right, my friend.
Correctamundo.
Yeah, the laugh of a very evil man.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming. He seemed so Wayne on the surface.
In the Cerritos bar, Tendi is having a huge bummer because she feels responsible for the slowdown that happened, making sure sentience wasn't possible in those microbes.
That defeat hang is a real thing. Like the, mm-hmm. we lost, let's like just fucking sit here and drink a beer.
It's like after every live show we've ever done, that kind of vibe.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I'm sure that the people that paid good money to come to that live show are also feeling that way. Like, they're just like, hey, man, you want to see if that dive around the corners open. Like, I just kind of want to blow off some steam now.
Hey, do you ever hear like an evil laugh from another area of the venue? I mean, I know it's probably difficult to hear over like the super loud club music as we're loading out, but I could swear I hear an evil laugh.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Like, it sounds distinctly like our friend / agent. But he wouldn't do anything evil.
He would never. Freeman overhears Tandy's bum out, and this is an epiphany.
If it was the right thing, why didn't the Alito slow down too?
Huh? You're right!
She kind of puts it together, and then she dials up Buenamigo immediately and is like, look, man, I thought the Alito was supposed to care about life. Like, that's sort of your deal now? That's your whole identity? But by skipping over a major part of your mission, this is what we do. We're Starfleet. We had to stop to guarantee that we weren't hurting anyone, and you never did. You don't care about the people you hurt.
If you didn't code in the Prime Directive, those aren't really Starfleet ships.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Les, but I have to take this to the Council.
And so she's having this conversation with him while Rutherford is still worrying over this iPad full of code.
Yeah.
And he realizes that the code that is running on the Alito is the work of none other than Red Eye Rutherford.
Yeah.
And I guess it's also the code that like Badgy runs on.
Yeah. So it's the same stuff.
It's got the same potential for evil as Badgy.
Yeah.
No, a starship can't have daddy issues.
On top of that, like how central Buenamigo is to the whole dark plot, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
Buenamigo stole the ship ideas from Red Eye Rutherford.
And wiped Rutherford's memory.
Yeah.
And like made it look like there was a horrible accident, so he had to have an implant put in.
Mm-hmm.
Very fucked up.
Yeah. It explains the laugh though, right?
Right. Yeah. Like the laugh kind of tracks now.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about laugh tracks. I'm talking about it tracks story-wise.
Now I get you. Do you think Shax's brother is named Trax?
Yes.
Like their parents do those cute names across all the siblings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then like somebody would tell Shax's brother a joke that he didn't necessarily find funny and they'd say, laugh, Trax. So Freeman is still on the FaceTime with Admiral Buenamigo when Rutherford like runs in to tell her about this diabolical twist he's uncovered. And Buenamigo goes full villain monologue where he like admits that the like Deep Space Nine episode was his idea. Mm-hmm. He's been pulling the strings this whole season, trying to discredit the Cali class, trying to find an opportunity. He knew the Breen were on Rekka and were going to, you know, spring this trap on the Cerritos. And it would be a perfect opportunity for him to show off just how disturbingly powerful Alito has become.
How good is Rutherford in this scene? Because he's listening to Buenamigo say all of this, but the main thrust of his argument is like, the Badgy programming is dangerous. Do not turn it on. Like, for the safety of everyone involved.
Yeah.
He almost doesn't even regard anything else Buenamigo says.
I really liked it, and I'm totally believe that Buenamigo is like feeling like he is justified in this. Like, he is not evil that thinks he's evil. He's like, I have a career to think about. I do feel like there is like a rationale for an automated ship system. And I mean, like he has played up a little bit cartoon villainy in this cartoon comedy show, but like the times when a manager kind of runs roughshod over safety concerns because they are worried about, you know, making their quarterly quota, right, or whatever, like totally, like this is like where like most of the evil in the world actually comes from, I feel like.
Yeah.
And that's
wage theft.
It's wage. Exactly, Adam. This is what an ideal futures equivalent of wage theft would look like.
You're better than this, Les.
I'm really not.
Did you think he was willing to kill, though? This turn here at the end of the scene where Buenamigo is like, all right, well, now that you're on to me, I have now constructed a universe in which Captain Freeman becomes so irate about her circumstances that she attacks one of these drone ships, and in self-defense, these drone ships destroy the Cerritos.
Yeah.
Ostensibly killing everyone aboard.
Well, conveniently, his goddaughter is not aboard, so I don't think he would have done it if Mariner had been there, but...
You think?
That's a thing that they don't talk about at all in this episode.
That's what I'm saying.
The Buenamigo... Like, Puerto Rico is
so
like
tight.
Really close with Mariner's whole family.
But, like...
He's a fucking lunatic.
But that's major crime, though, isn't it? You see it all the time. Like, the prime suspect and the eventual guilty party is often the family member or the close to the family person.
Right. Yeah, he's backed into a corner, and this is the only way he gets out of it and keeps his shiny uniform. So, he... sets the Alito to fully independent mode and says, hey, the Cerritos is now under enemy control and you have to destroy it.
I don't take orders from you anymore, father.
What?
It starts attacking the station.
Alito, deactivate independence.
I will burn your heart in a fire.
One of the wishes I think we've always had watching Star Trek is like we've encountered these star bases for years and years, but we've never seen one in a battle scenario. Because their scope is so large, your imagination takes off. Like, what would it be like? How would it defend itself? It's just got to be, there's no way to destroy one of these things. It's so huge. But as soon as you see these ships attack it and really damage it, it gets really scary, really fast. It's super neat to see a starbase defend itself in all the ways that it can. But
it's also scary to see like people walking down hallways in these like little spindly towers on top of it and just get sucked out into space.
This is 10,000 shopping malls in a stack.
Yeah.
And it's slowly being carved out by these three ships.
And it's also just nightmarish to me that like this was an opportunity to have the likenesses of Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison in this show get sucked out into space. And it's like they didn't even think about it.
It really makes you wonder if this show is ever going to make like an overt reference to a real person in either name or image.
Right.
And like, I just doubt they're ever going to do that.
I don't think they would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over in Mariner's neck of the woods, she's landed on Quaalor 3, the planet where you can get a slushy of anything.
We'll bring you back a slushy. Hey, I'll bring you back too.
I think we went here in season one and like they were talking about how you can get any drink in slushy form on this planet. It's a planet I want to visit more than any.
Yeah. You still doing that slushy walk with the dog every once in a while?
I do that every once in a while.
Yeah.
It's real nice. Also, I just discovered in this neighborhood, a venue that we should definitely play. It's like a good sized room for us here in LA. And they have slushy pina coladas and Thai food, like really good Thai food.
Oh my God, that sounds great. We should get our friend and agent on this idea.
We got to do this. And I don't think they have an upstairs to book a dance club night.
Perfect.
For...
Which has been a problem in LA.
Yes. So yeah, Petra's going to go deliver the relics that they've been collecting. Mariner makes some excuse to stay back on the ship. And the second Petra walks off, she gets on the computer to look up what the financing operation behind this thing looks like. And Petra walks right back on because obviously in a slushy beverage-based planet, you're going to have a buy 10, get one free punch card scenario.
Yeah.
And she forgot her punch card. This would drive me nuts. I would definitely not walk around on Quaalor 3 without a punch card. I would fill up two punch cards in one day.
These guys love a party.
But then you're walking around every planet with a stack of punch cards. Like, your pockets all stuffed.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable.
I still have punch cards for coffee shops that I go to in New York sometimes.
I threw out a bunch of punch cards during the last move.
Man.
Never going to use these.
Yeah.
Never going to complete the punch.
One of the things that broke my heart was I had one that was so old that they were like, I don't like the people that were working there were like, this isn't what our punch card looks like. I've been a customer at this place for so long that this legit older kind of punch card is unknown to all of the people currently working here.
Damn.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what corporations talk about when they talk about like the brain drain.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of that knowledge passed down.
Just
goes away.
All of those slushy discounts ungiven to the most loyal customers.
They turned you down.
Yeah.
What's it going to hurt? What's it going to hurt?
So Petrick catches her looking through the computer, and this is like one of those things where you're like, okay, the reveal is going to be that Petra's evil, because mm-hmm. that's what this is setting up. And it like, right. it's totally what Mariner was looking for when she got suspicious. And it turns out Admiral Picard is financing Petra.
That guy loves mummies even more than you.
It's like she's horrified at how good the news is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a real reversal of expectations.
She doesn't get to say, like, I'm disgusted with you and storm out.
She gets to throw it in no one's face.
Yeah. We should have seen it coming, though, with a last name like Admiral Picardine.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
They do play a lot with names on this show.
They do. Yeah. Names, name jokes. Uh-huh.
We need to score a lot of land fast.
We're licensed businessmen.
Well, there's a new ship. She's got the right name. She's got the right name. Now you remember that, you hear? Now you remember that, you hear?
Back at the space station, the Van Sitters drops out of warp, another sovereign class to...
Oh! Oh, so we are... naming things after real people.
After real people, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that the Starbase didn't send out a message to the Van Sitters that just went unresponded to for like months or years.
Yeah.
Cool that the ship responded.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really cool that they came through with just anything. It didn't necessarily have to be a yes, but mm-hmm. something would have been nice. it is no match for the Texas class. The Texas class, tougher than the Sovereign class.
Better looking than the Sovereign class.
Ooh, hot take. Even the way they render it in Lower Decks?
I mean, still the best it's ever looked, but yeah, not a fan.
Wow. It's getting its ass kicked, and Freeman is like, we've got to convince the Texans to come to California rather than the other way around. And the way she does this is by hailing the Alito and getting Rutherford on the screen. And Rutherford, she explains that Rutherford is the person that coded the Texas class code base and would have some ability to, I guess, undo that code.
God, Rutherford almost blows it here.
I do. Oh, yeah. You better stop attacking or you're done. So,
yeah,
not great at improv is Rutherford.
He doesn't really yes and this plan.
But the ship recognizes Rutherford. And that's, I think, what Freeman is banking on, right?
Like, yeah.
The ship recognizes him as a threat.
It does facial recognition and shows like the picture of Red Eye Rutherford mm-hmm. next to. And so all three Texas class ships start chasing the Cerritos, and they go to maximum warp, and they're like really pushing the engines, and you know, it's touch and go, and they're like trying to come up with a plan.
They go to warp to draw the Texas class ships away.
Right.
Primarily.
And they're going around the bridge. What are we going to do about these three way more powerful ships chasing us? And they kind of breeze past Shax's idea, but Boimler, who has been desperately trying to curry favor with Shax, like stands up in the middle of the bridge and makes everybody listen to Shax's idea, because it's actually a good idea. It's an idea that we've seen used in Starfleet before.
It's the most explosive idea of all the ideas. And this is like an early Shax concept. This is a Shax callback.
Yeah.
He likes to make things go boom.
He likes to eject the warp core. And this is his big opportunity to do so.
Mr. Shax, make it so.
Really, Captain?
He gets sort of his hero walk down to engineering to, you know, turn the matched set of keys with Billups to eject the warp core.
Turn your keys, sir.
It's so great how everyone is so congratulatory about him realizing a dream he's always had.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Chris Westlake score really does a lot of lifting here too. Like, and throughout the episode, yeah, does a great job in like bringing this moment to a head.
The score on this episode is really fucking great.
Yeah.
So they blow up two of the Texas class ships, but unfortunately, like, as much as you wish the Alito would have a heart attack or, you know, be in a car crash or something, it survives the warp core explosion and is still way more than a match for the Cerritos. And Mariner comes out of warp in her crappy ship.
I mean, it's not crappy. I don't think Admiral Picard would have bankrolled something shitty. It's probably,
I mean, for its size, but it's not.
In a rental car parlance, I don't think this is the economy ship. It's probably mid-size or full-size.
Right, but it can't even fuck with the Cerritos, and the Cerritos cannot fuck with the Alito.
And this is the point that Freeman makes when Mariner's on the scene. Freeman is Mariner's mom primarily in this moment, and is right, like, get out of here, it's too dangerous.
Yeah.
She's like, you gotta get out of here.
Yeah. She really is.
Come on. One of us was going to do the Freeman voice at some point, right? I'm shocked it was me.
I am baffled that this is how events have unfolded. The thing is, Mariner didn't come unprepared for a fight.
No.
Because the Oakland drops out of warp, and then all of the Cali-class ships drop out of warp.
The name-checking is great here.
Crete, Mauritania, then Transylvania, Monaco, Liechtenstein, Malta, and Palestine, Fiji, Australia, Sudan.
The name-checking is great. We get an armada of Californias. We get a, how shall I put this, a cadre of Cali-class captain callbacks.
God, you're so good at this. I'm so glad I get to see this in person.
Pretty much every Cali class captain we've met gets a little moment.
Not to put you on the spot, are you disappointed that a California named thing wasn't named? Like, are there cities missing that you feel like, well, I mean, a follow up to my follow up question, do you think that they couldn't be too funny with the names intentionally?
Right, because there's like some California cities that are so silly sounding that,
yeah, like, yeah, Rancho Cucamonga,
right,
and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, this is supposed to be all of the California class ships, right?
I know.
So I hope they're still commissioning these things in future seasons, because I want the USS Rancho Cucamonga.
Yeah, you know? I want the Tustin. Actually, the Tustin's already been in an episode, hasn't it?
Yeah. About the USS City of Industry. That would be fun.
Hell yeah.
There's also ones on the other side, like Concord, California is,
yeah,
just like a bunch of malls and suburban houses. Like, mm-hmm, it's nothing, but like the USS Concord sounds kind of rad.
You it know? Does, yeah.
The USS Lafayette sounds kind of rad. Same story.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of options there. I mean, the list in the room is 50 names long.
It's pretty good. And these Cali classes team up, and it basically takes all of them to take down the Alito.
But in a very Star Trek movie kind of moment, and I'm like getting the chills thinking about this, but like when all of the ships team up and the score starts to swell.
Yeah.
And the tide starts to turn.
Yeah.
And a ship starts getting rocked by the good guys.
Yeah.
It feels great.
It's really fun.
It feels better than Star Wars when that happens. And I can't really articulate why.
Because it's the good guys. It's not the filthy resistance.
I guess. Yeah. It's all of the good parts of Star Trek teaming up.
Yeah.
In a really great way. Finally, justice may be served with the Alito out of the way, right?
Like, inshallah. So back at Douglas Station, which is tore up.
Yeah.
We're repairing the Cerritos once again. And like
Douglas Station looks like a can that was used in a Just Married kind of can dragging scenario behind a car. It looks bad.
Do you think that they considered tiling out the warp core going into the Cerritos?
I mean, it is so suggestive. They had to show it, though.
They do. You got to show it going in.
It's a butt joke.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah.
It's good. The betas apologize to Mariner for being sort of not on her team in the way she needed them to be on her team when she got kicked off the ship. We learn that Rutherford is going to keep the implant.
It robbed me of my memories and it was used to cover up deadly crimes.
But it's so cool! I'm still finding submenus I had no idea were in there.
Yeah, I love how momentarily tormented he is by the decision. But ultimately, it's sort of like the iPhone dilemma. Like, God, the circumstances surrounding its production are really terrible to think about the longer you think about them. But it's so cool.
Takes really good pictures. I like that one of the things that seems to be persuading him to keep it is the predator cam function that it has.
I thought for sure that when you see POV, it was suggesting that some people in the background may not be human, but I think it was a depth of ability there.
Yeah.
Because there's a swarthy bearded guy in the middle that does not show up to the heat sensor. And I was like, ooh, what does that mean? But it doesn't mean anything.
Maybe it means he's an android.
Just means he's out of range, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
Tendi is getting a cadet. Talin is going to work for Tendi.
Welcome back, T-Lin. That rules.
That's from the Three Ships episode, right?
It is, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Shax brings Boimes into the bear pack.
Are you my bridge buddy?
Absolutely, baby bear.
Aw, bears.
Pretty great. I want to be in the bear pack.
Baby bear is taken, though.
It's true, but like Rutherford's goodness is so apparent here because he's not envious at all.
He doesn't feel possessive in any way of the nomenclature.
If it were you or me, we would see Boimler being taken up in Shax's giant shoulders and be envious of that place and how safe and warm it has to feel.
But Rutherford has like pretty big shoulders of his own.
So yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't need that.
He's doing fine.
Yeah.
He can self-hug.
The button on the episode is Mariner talking to Freeman and sort of rededicating herself to her position in Starfleet. She gets reinstated.
I like how subtly deep this moment is between Freeman and Mariner, because the self-awareness of Mariner here is apparent and good in that she recognizes that like trust is extended to trustworthy people.
Yeah.
And the way that she's behaved has not been trustworthy.
It's been uncool.
Yeah. And so they both kind of recognize that as being the truth and are able to get past it.
I like that that it ends on a joke about how much of a pain in the ass this is going to be for Ransom.
Yeah.
Jack, Mariner's back on board and she's going to be your shadow.
What? Thanks, no. Mom. I'm going to be at your side at all times.
Please,
commanding,
please don't do this
duty, responsibility.
Why is this happening?
Both Ransom and T-Lin are going to have a lot in common next season.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Yeah.
You know, Adam, we talked a little bit a couple of weeks ago about the idea of an after credits moment. Did you watch to the end of the credits in this episode?
Holy shit, I didn't.
Okay, let's watch it together, because I forgot to write down notes about it, and
can I make a guess?
It's momentous. Okay, yeah, let's
you haven't seen it? Does it have to do with the other Boimler and the Section 31 thing?
It does not.
That was going to be my guess. Okay, I'm ready to be surprised.
Surprise, motherfucker.
I can't believe I didn't watch to the end, and the reason why is because these screeners have had temp credits for so long.
Yeah, and these in particular have these like titmouse like slates about like what format they mixed it down in. All right, I'm just queuing this up on my TV. You're gonna hear this live from the position. I'm gonna turn it down a little bit so it doesn't mess up our audio. Here we go.
Wow.
So what we just watched was something that I think, I don't remember if it was you or me, but one of us predicted that the Rutherford implant floating in the Kala system that we saw earlier this season was going to get collected.
I liked seeing Rutherford's old implant floating out there. I kind of wonder if the fact that that implant is intact and floating in space will factor into another future episode.
I mean, it may have been picked up by the Drukmani, right? We don't know that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. The Drukmani could be wise to whatever's going on with Rutherford before we are.
Right.
We can't see whose beam that is, but it looks like the Drukmani scavenger beam, doesn't it?
Sure does.
And the badgie appears on the eyepiece of Rutherford's lost implant at the end of this episode.
The potential being the fourth season heavy could be Badgie.
Yeah. Amazing.
The Wrath of Badgie. I mean, this being season three of Lower Decks, there's been a lot of visual metaphor with the third Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
The fourth Star Trek movie being The Voyage Home.
They always do the poster for each season as a riff on the poster from the corresponding movie.
Are we going to get time travel elements?
Time travel.
Involving Badgie?
Wow. I mean, we've heard that a couple of these characters are going to appear on Strange New Worlds, and that could be a time travel story that ties both series together.
That would be an elegant way to do it.
Yeah. Very fun.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see season four. But I guess before we get too far afield in the future, Adam, we should talk about whether or not we liked this episode of season three. How about you?
The only way that I did not like this episode is the knowledge that it ends the season and we're waiting again for the next. I have minced no words about how much I love Lower Decks as a concept. The miracle that it exists at all is something I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
It hits every time for me. And a nice conclusion, a neat conclusion to a season that seems unusual for Lower Decks or any Star Trek season, really.
Yeah.
I mean, outside of the post-credit sequence I just saw, I wouldn't consider that a cliff to hang off of. It's just kind of a glimpse into another area of the story. But yeah, I loved the episode. I thought it was a great season. No notes. I will miss it while it's gone, but plenty of new Star Trek is on the way to fill the gap. What about you?
I'd say if I have one note, it's
it's the name of the Sovereign class ship that that comes in and does not save the day.
No, it's there was something about the mechanics of this episode that felt a lot like the previous episode. I think it was just that there were three very overpowered ships chasing the Cerritos in both episodes. You know, in the last episode, it was Breen's, and in this episode, it was the Texas-class ships gone haywire. But
yeah, why not give us a fourth ship?
Or have it just be one Texas-class ship that is so powerful, or whatever, you know, like...
Texas is supposed to be bigger.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a mega Texas.
Why is the Texas-class ship so much littler than the Cerritos?
Yeah.
Make it really big.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not?
Texans are going to be pissed about this. That the whole series has made a joke of their state.
Yeah, they don't take kindly to that, do they?
No. The stars at night are small and bright.
Who's grieving Buen Amigo at the end of this season?
Mm.
Friend of the family.
Yeah.
Double cross.
You would think that we would get a scene with the Freeman/Mariner family. Talking about how we trusted this man for a long time. We trusted him so much that we made him the godfather of our one child.
Yikes.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Talk about your all-time misreads of character.
Maybe they'd just rather not talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how families are supposed to function, right? In the aftermath of a trauma.
I found that that works great. Yeah.
Well, Ben, something that is rarely traumatic is the reading of a Priority One message. You want to go see what we've got?
Yeah, that sounds real nice.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Well, no Priority One messages on today's show, which is fine. It's a surprise special episode in the middle of a day that wouldn't otherwise have one. But if you'd like to get a P1 on the show, we've got the exciting review of a bunch of Star Trek Prodigy episodes coming right up. And we'd sure like to read your message. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message over there at MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin! Definitional Larkins seem obvious, and I don't like to always call them out, but like Buen Amigo is my Larkin. He's the guy with the crazy idea, a pseudo genius.
Yeah.
Someone who lets his appetite for careerism overshadow a morality that admirals should have, but so rarely do in Star Trek.
Yeah.
So
somebody should check that guy for nubbins.
Like, yeah, like a Larkin being suffocated to death on a ship being quickly filled with tribbles,
yeah,
and their fur. Yeah, I mean, Buen Amigo eats it like Larkin does. He gets killed by his own creation, and that's why he's my Edward Larkin. What about you?
He's mine as well. I was just thinking about how long he had this plan in the works. Like his justification is like when you become an admiral, like your career kind of plateaus and there's nothing to do. There's no way to like work your way up any further.
As if someone could be bored by a new starship program.
Right.
Like that's really cool.
But like when you go to the flashback of young Buen Amigo erasing Rutherford, I think he's like a lieutenant commander in that.
He was evil a long time ago.
Yeah, he was like getting stuck in the Admiralty was not a problem for that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that guy was still working his way up toward being an admiral.
It's almost as if promotion and job advancement doesn't fix all of the broken things inside a person.
I'm pretty sure they would fix the broken things inside me, though.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
You should try that then. You should try being successful.
Never mind. It sounds really hard. So, Buen Amigo is also my Edward Larkin.
Ben, it's time for the new hit segment.
That has a name?
Yeah, it's got a name. I've decided what the name is. I haven't consulted with you about it.
Huh. Because we were like talking about maybe having a poll.
Yeah.
Soliciting ideas.
We did.
Uh-huh.
There was a poll.
Yeah.
I'm not choosing what the people have chosen, though.
Okay, the results are in.
Yeah, I think a great idea would be to call these nice things that people say to us, warning buoys.
Prepare a buoy and launch it when ready.
Warning buoys.
An emergency buoy. A warning buoy.
Because that anyone could be this enthusiastic about our show, I think really demonstrates something to worry about.
Yeah, sure.
In the message sender.
Right.
What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, most of the time they're just sincere recommendations of the show, but you know, depending on who you are reading that, if you're uninitiated, it can be like, woo.
Yeah.
There but for the grace.
Sure don't want to become like that person. So yeah, what do you say we try this name of the segment on for size and see if it sticks?
Okay, well, you're going to feel really bad when I read you the message that we got today, because this is from Instagram, at Darius415 said, in August, my mother passed away. It's been a month and I'm still not okay. There are a lot of thoughts and sadness in my head right now. I'm not doing so great, and accepting that I don't have to be amazing and happy right now is just something I have to accept. That said, I had a moment of happiness today. A podcast I love, Greatest Trek, sent me a Captain Janeway Star Trek Voyager patch for supporting their program. It's the little moments that I need to learn to cherish and appreciate. That is all. Thank you.
Boy, if you had just ended that message with, I don't have to be happy today, and that's and that's the message about our show, that seems more believable. But as it is, Wow.
Yeah. Darius, I'm so, so sorry to hear about the passing of your mother, and definitely take all the time you need to learn to live with that. And we're going to be here for you every week. We love you tons, bud.
Jeez, man.
You're a real asshole, Adam.
I kind of want to choose a different name for Distress Bois.
Is it Distress Bois or Warning Bois?
It's Warning Bois. It is. But I'm feeling some distress about how this segment went today.
Yeah, yeah. This is a bad day to choose a name. Well, Adam, we are going to be tossing the keys to this episode off to our producer, Wendy Pretty, who will tell you about next week's episode. We're going to be back on, it's still season one of Star Trek Prodigy.
Yeah, took like the only new Star Trek series that does 26 episode seasons, the way Star Trek used to do.
Yeah.
That's the way my Star Trek did seasons.
So Star Trek Prodigy is the only one that is currently our Star Trek. All of these other ones are not my Star Trek, but we're going to be back doing it. And, you know,
bad opinion Star Trek guy just happens to sound like Bill Maher. Because I only know four impressions, okay?
We're going to be back on that. I heard from Wendy that the next several episodes are really fun, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, I trust her judgment.
Yeah.
In all areas aside from choosing a career.
Take it away, Wendy.
Not taking career advice from Wendy.
Greatest Trek is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica, and it's produced and edited by Wendy Pretty. We'll be back next week on Tuesday with a review of Star Trek Prodigy Season 1, Episode 11. It's called Asylum. At the edge of Federation space, the crew applies for asylum at Deep Space 13, only for their starship to reveal its shocking true purpose. As always, we want to thank Adam Ragusea for all of the original music that we use on this show. You can find his podcast and YouTube cooking channel by searching for Adam Ragusea. Thank you as well to Bill Tilley, who manages the social media for Uxbridge Shimoda. Make sure you're following at Greatest Trek on Instagram and Twitter, and use the hashtag Greatest Trek to talk about the show online. We appreciate your ratings and reviews, and also your recommendations to people that you know. We also really appreciate the members who are supporting the show at MaximumFun.org/join. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Greatest Trek.
Why do you sound so weird? Frog asked Throat. Because I am sad.
Mm.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.